discussion?
Yes, Chairperson.
Do we have the Department of Military Veterans officials on the platform?
We do, Chairperson. Mr. Makaleng is online. Let me just find out by then.
Please do. It's 10 o'clock, so we want to start.
Good morning, honorable members. It's Nontobeko talking. I'll be leading the department on behalf of General Mgwebi, who is currently in the presidential task team meeting.
Okay, will he be joining us later, or he's not joining us at all?
He will be joining us, but the meeting normally runs until late. It's possible that he might not be able to join us.
Okay, thank you. Honourable members, it is 10 o'clock or it's 2 minutes or 1 minute past 10. I think we can start our meeting. Good morning to honourable members of the Black Community and Security and Justice. I just want to give an indication of who from the committee is present. We have Honourable Zidovu from the Northwest, Honourable Mikolakis from the Free State, Honourable Bartlett from the Northern Cape, Honourable Sileku from the Western Cape, Honourable Motsamai from Gauteng. In terms of members of the committee, and then myself, Sheda Sheikh from Limpopo. Our members, we also invited members of the NCOP who are not members of the Select Committee on Security and Justice, but are members that serve on the Joint Committee on Defence. Members will know Honourable Bartlett, Honourable Mkosi, and Honourable Motsamai from this committee also serve on the Joint Committee on Defence. But we've also invited Honourable Nchavi Leng, who is the co-chair of the Joint Committee on Defence.
Chairperson, we don't hear anything, Chairperson.
Is it just yourself, Honourable Motsamai, or is it everybody else?
We can hear from this side, Chair.
It's only him.
Okay, Honourable Motsamai, I think it's yourself. Maybe you must increase the volume on your phone. But anyway, as I was saying, that we invited members of the Joint Committee on Defence, and Honourable Nchavi Leng and Honourable Ryder are two members that don't serve on this committee whom we invited. Honourable Nchavi Leng is present and welcome. I'm not sure if Honourable Ryder will be joining us, but we have not received any indication. And then, Honourable members, we have an apology from the minister who indicated that she is part of the presidential task team meeting, which is currently taking place. But she did indicate to us that the delegation from the Department of Military Veterans will be led by the acting DG, Lieutenant General Mwebi, whom we just got information now is currently in that meeting as well. Yeah, there's another head of delegation. But anyway, we'll deal with that matter then. We have an apology from Honourable Nita from the Eastern Cape, Honourable Fisher from the Northwest, and Honourable Nkosi from Mpumalanga. Those are apologies, but let me then just welcome honorable members and welcome officials from the Department of Military Veterans to this meeting. This is our first engagement with the Department of Military Veterans in this term. But I thought I should just also give a bit of a background in terms of today's engagement. In the 2020-2021 financial year, at our threat planning session of the NCOP, we agreed that the Select Committee on Security and Justice, together with the Select Committee on COPTA, Water Affairs and Human Settlements, would embark on joint oversight program in respect of military veterans. We also reaffirmed this decision just 2 days ago in our planning session. We actually are two committees in one present here, members that serve on the Select Committee on COPTA, Human Settlement Board Implementation, also serve in the Select Committee on Security and Justice. I remember during the first parliament, there were activities that the Select Committee on Security and Justice embarked on in relation to military veterans. They visited Mpumalanga in the Northern Cape provinces and conducted oversight activities over the Department of Military Veterans in these provinces. And in 2016, the committee also conducted oversight in Mpumalanga, where they visited sites where houses had been built for military veterans. In 2017, during the Northern Cape visit, the committee met with the Department of Military Veterans and the South African Military Health Services regarding the rollout of health benefits to military veterans. And during these visits, oversight visits, it became apparent to the committee that at that time, that the department was experiencing various challenges with regard to the rollout of benefits to military veterans. So we're conducting this follow-up and engagement with the department to get a better understanding on the progress that has been made. In this instance, the committee is interested in the distribution of houses and the illegal occupation of houses meant for military veterans and how this is being addressed. However, this engagement seeks to also look more broadly at the distribution of all benefits for military veterans in all provinces of the country, and hence the primary objective of our engagement is for the committee to get a better understanding of the provincial challenges that are encountered by the department in the distribution of these benefits, and we hope that collectively we would then address these challenges and develop a way forward. So our expectation from the Department of Military Veterans is that we get an overview of the benefits for military veterans. We get a brief on the service delivery per province, as we represent different provinces in the National Council of Provinces, but also as we continue doing our oversight work, we can then focus on specific areas. We're also expecting a presentation on the challenges in delivery of benefits and an update on the maintenance of the Department of Military Veterans database. Okay, let me then welcome the department to make that presentation. Okay, and our members, I think it will give us a better understanding of what is going on, especially with provincial challenges. Thereafter, our members will then open it up for engagement with the department. Let me hand over to the department. You can also introduce yourself, your position, and I'm not sure if you're with other officials as well. Next.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Nondobeko Mafu. I'm a Deputy Director General, Empowerment and Stakeholder Management. And together with me, I have EXCO members who have joined, who are going to be assisting me in articulating questions and engagements that will ensue as a result of this. But before I introduce them, can I then tender an official apology for General Ngwebi, who is supporting technically the minister in the meeting with the presidential task team. With me, I have Mr. Matsafu, who is the acting deputy director general, SES, and I have Mr. Siengo, who is the acting deputy director general, corporate services. I have the GTO of the department. I have internal audit, Ms. Gasamba. I have a SIMA manager in the office of the DG. Ma'am, allow the department to then do the presentation, and the presentation will be done by Mr. Siengo, who is in the corporate services environment. But we will all of us be able to join in when we are to clarify further. With your permission, ma'am, can we proceed?
Please do.
Mr. Siengo, please proceed with the presentation. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Acting DG. Good morning, Chair, and good morning to honorable members, and also good morning to my colleagues in the department. As indicated, I will be doing the presentation on behalf of Lieutenant General Ngwebi. It's the presentation to the Select Committee on Security and Justice. Thank you again for the opportunity provided for us to do this presentation. Then this presentation, the purpose of the presentation is to, as indicated in the brief that we received, is to provide a briefing in terms of how the department is delivering on the benefits as prescribed in the Military Veterans Act of 2011. Then this is a breakdown in terms of provinces, and we've also reflected in terms of challenges. And this is the outline of the presentation. We'll break it down in terms of the two programs, the service delivery programs, and we'll also reflect on the database, you know, that the department is using to disperse these benefits. Next slide. And then next slide. And then in terms of, these are the benefits that the department, 11 benefits that the department, in terms of the act, they are prescribed to deliver. It's compensation, dedicated counseling, honoring and memorization of fallen military veterans, education, training, skills and development, facilitation of employment placement, facilitation of business opportunities, subsidization of provision of subsidized public transport, pension, access to healthcare, housing and burial support. So these are the 11 benefits that the department is discussing. It's supposed to be prescribed in the act. And then how then these benefits are broken down in terms of the departmental structure. In the program two, which is the socio-economic support program, it's responsible for most of the benefits. Currently, this program is disbursing five of the benefits, which is compensation, dedicated counseling and treatment, access to healthcare, housing and education. The benefits that have not yet been activated by the department is the pension benefits and also provision of subsidized public transport. And then when we move on to program three, program three, out of the 11, it's is dispersing currently four benefits, which is training and skills, facilitation of employment placement, facilitation of business opportunities, and also burial support. Then what I will do, Honorable Members and Chair, is then I will go down now to the specific numbers in terms of how in 2021 the department has fared in terms of delivery of these services. And then as part of that presentation, or as part of that reflection, I will also reflect in terms of the challenges that we've experienced in 2021. And some of these challenges extend beyond 2021, it's challenges that the department has been facing, I think as the Chair has reflected in her opening statement. When we move back then to Program 2, Chair, in terms of Slide 7, for compensation, the department has been able to assist 25 military veterans, and most of these military veterans, or all of them, have been coming from the province of KwaZulu-Natal. And what we have further done is we have broken down, the military veterans by the force they belong to. And you then begin to see, then in the last column, the challenges that we have been experiencing, especially in 2021. I think we're all aware that COVID-19 pandemic has really had a lot of restrictions in terms of how we operate in government, as such as the country. And maybe then the second challenge in relation to this, which is perhaps not really related to COVID-19 pandemic, is the availability of healthcare professionals at the South African Military Health Service, which is a service provider that is assisting the department when it comes to assessment of military veterans before they are compensated. And then in terms of dedicated counseling and treatment, for 2021, we have assisted 336 military veterans, and per province, this is a breakdown that has been provided. We begin to see a high number in terms of Gauteng province, and then the breakdown in terms of the force. And then here again, the challenge that we have been experiencing for 2021 because of the restrictions of COVID-19, the access to the health facilities, has been restricted. So it's been difficult for military veterans to access these health facilities because of the restrictions that have been placed because of the COVID-19 pandemic. When we move to the next slide, in terms of access to healthcare, here, let me start in column 2 of access to healthcare. I will start firstly with the second bullet, where we talk about 18,346 military veterans. Here, what we do is military veterans will apply for access to healthcare. So far, the department, since this benefit was activated, has been able to provide access to 18,346 military veterans. However, it must be indicated that this is just a provision of access or authorized. You authorize the military veteran to access. But then from year to year, then you find that those that have been authorized to access, there are those that actually would access healthcare. Some out of these 18,346 would not access. For example, in 2021 financial year, 348 military veterans have been able to use the benefits, have been able to access the benefits. And this is also a breakdown in terms of provinces. And again, we begin to see Gauteng and Western Cape being the provinces where this benefit is being used mostly, and then the breakdown in terms of the force. And then here, in terms of the challenges, we must indicate that because of the department as a challenge in terms of ICT infrastructure, you will begin to see that when we talk about the database itself solution that the department is going to be implementing very soon, that the manual processing of applications is really, because it's main applications, it's causing delays and it's causing problems for the department. So that's one particular program problem challenge. And the second challenge is then the failure of some of the applicants to submit complete applications and supporting documents, because for us to be able to assist military veterans, we must have a complete set of these documents. And then we, in the unit itself of healthcare and wellness, there is there's a shortage of staff that is able now to process all these applications manually. So those are the kind of challenges that we're experiencing in healthcare. And then, as I indicated in my earlier opening statement, that pension and subsidized provision of subsidized transport has not been activated. Here, we are currently, Chair and Honourable Members, working, we're at the final stages now of the developing policies that will assist us to ensure that we provide these benefits. And I must indicate that the target for the department was that by the end of this financial year, we must have these policies in place so that we are able then to activate these benefits. There's been several engagements between ourselves as a department and the sister departments that are going to assist us to disperse these benefits. For example, in terms of pension, we have been talking to National Treasury, Government Pensions Administrating Agency, and also to Department of Social Development. They've been really been assisting, adding value in terms of ensuring that this the policy for this we align in relation to the provision of pension. We are now currently at the final stages of finalizing that policy. And also in terms of public transport, here at some stage late last year, we were at a stage where we wanted to pilot, we were ready to pilot, but there were a few delays. We were going to be assisted by the Department of Transport. But in February, when we were really about to go into a pilot, we also had selected Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal as provinces that we wanted to use as a pilot, because this one involves a lot of technical mechanism in terms of how we would provide, we needed to work out how we then identify a military veteran, how would they be able to access transport, what mode of transport must they use, and all of those kind of technicalities. But we wanted to first pilot it so that we don't, in the implementation of this benefit, we run into challenges. But then COVID at that point, hit us. So that we are hoping then that as the country is beginning to ease down on these restrictions, we'll be able then to start with that in this new financial year. The next slide. Then in terms of housing benefits, in housing benefits, there are two sub-benefits, if I call them that, that have been regulated in terms of the Act. That is the provision of newly built houses and also assisting military veterans who are in distress with their mortgage loans settlement. I will start with the one of newly built houses, where the department has assisted 127 military veterans with newly built houses, and these are mostly in Gauteng. It has been difficult, I must say, to because we work with the Department of Human Settlements. We have really not been able to kind of categorize this according to forces. But I think as we improve our implementation together with Department of Human Settlements, I think that is one of the things that we will probably improve on. And then in terms of the newly built houses, I must indicate that in terms of the, maybe before I go to the challenges around this area, I must report that in terms of mortgage loan settlements, we have assisted 252 military veterans. And here in this particular benefit, this is demand driven. In the sense that military veterans that are distressed with their mortgage loans would come to the department and apply, and then the department would assess their situation based on the documents that are required, and then they would then be able to settle those loans if then a military veteran qualifies. As I indicated then, in this housing provision of housing, we are working closely with the Department of Human Settlements. Here, challenges have been experienced around, I think we're beginning to improve that, you know, our relationship with human settlements, in the sense that I think the chair reflected on this to say that in certain areas where there are projects that have been identified, we see that there is illegal occupation of the houses, and also we also see that in, especially in Gauteng, in areas where these projects have been identified, projects go ahead, but then infrastructure in terms of supporting that those houses would not be visible, or it would come at a later stage. And it, of course, when you build houses without infrastructure, that provides problems. And also, I think one of the issues that we have had here, which is a problem in terms of, you would see in terms of the spend that the department is in terms of this housing benefit, is that we remember in the housing benefit, settlement, Department of Human Settlement would pay what, you know, they would pay in terms of the RTP house. But then the department would top up because the square meter of military veterans is bigger than the square meter that is provided by human settlements. So then the department pays the top up. But what we then find is that provinces do not submit invoices to the department. Hence, it affects the spend of the Department of Military Veterans in this area. So we have been engaging with CFOs, and to the extent that we have in some provinces, issues have been escalated to HODs of this Department of Housing or Human Settlements, whereby we have been requesting for these invoices to be forwarded to DMV so that DMV can settle these amounts. And then, of course, then there are issues related to maintenance of these houses after they've been handed over, because years later military veterans will come and complain that you know, there was poor workmanship in terms of the houses, and then the department would then have to you know, follow up in terms of having to maintain those houses. So we are then improving our relationship with the Department of Human Settlements. We have got now engagements, regular engagements and bilaterals with each of the provinces, just to ensure that at least the relationship between ourselves and we understand each other. And we also begin together with those provinces, identify areas or projects where then we would be able to build or to identify, to build houses for military veterans. And then if you move to the next slide. And then in terms of education support, this is one of the most demanded benefit in the department, the education support. We provide education support for basic education and also for tertiary education to both military veterans and their dependents. In terms of 2021, we have been able to support 3,223 military veterans and their dependents. And the breakdown is that in basic education, that's where the demand is mostly, because it's the dependents of the military veteran, it's 2,586. And then we are also supporting a tertiary level. And this is a breakdown in terms of provinces, both in basic and in tertiary. I must indicate here that we've had a lot of challenges around education support. We know that as a department. Hence now, the department has been implementing what we call a decentralization model, where we are looking at using our provincial offices to help us to access military veterans that have challenges around this area, and where we have challenges in terms of getting invoices from the schools to pay for education support for military veterans and dependents. We are now implementing that model as a department, where in provinces now we no longer, well, we do even here at head office, but now we are trying by all means to get to a level where military veterans do not have to travel to Pretoria if they have challenges regarding education support. They must, in their own provinces, be assisted. Again, here, challenges, it's mostly, as I indicated, that the department doesn't really have strong ICT infrastructure. Documents are being handled manually, and it's volumes of documents to the extent that the department is being assisted by members of the reserve force in the defense to actually process these volumes of documents. So that's the status in terms of education support. And then when we then move to to program three, which is empowerment and stakeholder management. I indicated earlier on that four benefits are in this program. And if you move to the next slide, this is just a summary in terms of how then these benefits, this is only focusing on skills, employment placement, and business that has been facilitated, or opportunities that have been facilitated in terms of business for military veterans. This is just a table in terms of the summary that say that for 2021, for skills, 369 military veterans have been approved. 129 veterans have been placed in terms of employment. For businesses, 121 have been assisted. How, in terms of business, we work as a department is that we work with our sister departments. We identify military or military veterans companies will come and apply in the department to be assisted. So we vet the companies, and then we then talk to our sister departments to actually prioritize a military veterans company when business opportunities become available. So that's the model that we use in the department. And then when we go then to the next slide, we will then go province by province to break it down. To say that in terms of Eastern Cape, the department has assisted five military veterans in terms of training and skills development, facilitated for employment placement two military veterans, has assisted 67 military veterans in terms of burial support, And then in terms of business opportunities, we've assisted four companies that of military veterans. And these are the challenges that we are facing here. Again, you will begin to see the issue of the manual processing of documents in the department that is becoming a problem across all benefits. And again, here, what we are saying here as a challenge also is that I indicated earlier on what we do as a department, we speak to our sister departments, even both in terms of business opportunities and employment placement. When we train a military veteran or assist to train a military veteran, we really don't have a mechanism of monitoring and evaluation to assess whether that military veteran has got employment elsewhere. It might be that as a department, we are underreporting in this area because we know for a fact that, you know, out of all the military veterans that we've trained, some do not come back to the department and provide feedback when they've received employment elsewhere. But for those then that we directly, you know, place and assist, then we're able to report on those. So hence we're saying then it then becomes a challenge for us. Then hence we're saying the M&E part of it is a challenge. When we move to the next province, which is Western Cape, here you would see the numbers. It's 151 for training and skills development. Employment placement is one. We've assisted 32 military veterans to be buried, and business opportunities four. And here we have really not have any, in terms of training and development in the Western Cape, because of the proactive approach that the department has taken. Because in the past, what we used to do, we used to welcome military, wait for military veterans to come and apply for the skills and development program. But now what we have decided to do as a department is to be proactive and to go out and invite military veterans and identify opportunities in terms of skills training programs. So that has really assisted us in terms of increasing the numbers that we are training as a department. I will not really, you know, try and stress the point of how much COVID has affected our operations, because you would understand that most of the work that needs to be done in this area, in all of these four benefits, is we needed. There is a contact, a level of contact that is required between ourselves and military veterans. But because of the restrictions, it has really been difficult then for us then to make that those kind of a contact. And then again, in the department, when you look at the structure of the department, I think we've reflected on this in our annual report, is that in the service delivery branches, which is program 2 and program 3, there's really no not a proper alignment in terms of the officials, because you find that officials in these areas where there is a requirement for a number of officials to interact or to execute, that the department is thin in terms of officials in those areas. So hence then, you would find officials being overworked in those areas. Then when we move then to another province, which is Northern Cape, you see here that in terms of training and development, it's three military veterans that have been assisted. No military veteran has been placed in terms of employment. 18 have been assisted for burial support, and one has been assisted in terms of business opportunities. Again, the challenges cut across. I will not go through them again. Let's move to the next one, which is Northwest and Free State. Um, the numbers here, it's 10, in the Northwest is 10 for training, for placement, employment placement is 3, variable support is 25, and then we've assisted one company in terms of business opportunity. Again, in terms of the challenges, they are quite, they cut across. In Free State, it's 1 for training, 1 for employment facilitation, and 15 for burial support. Then when we move to the last three provinces, which is KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, and Limpopo. In KwaZulu-Natal, in areas where you see an increase in these numbers, it's the initiative that the department has taken to say that we're going to do what we call as Operation Chasseur, where we'll be proactive and go to these provinces and interact with veterans so that then we're able to identify the skills gaps and needs for military veterans. So then it is really beginning to improve in terms of how the department is providing this benefit. And then when we move to Gauteng, again with Gauteng, even when you look at the numbers in terms of the database, I mean, a large number of military veterans are in Gauteng, they reside in Gauteng, so you begin to see large numbers here, and perhaps I think the advantage here is the fact that DMV headquarters are situated here. So and then when we then move to Limpopo province, which is lumped together with Mpumalanga, these are the numbers being reported. And for Mpumalanga province, we really don't have much challenges because I think there's a good working relationship there between our provincial coordinators and military veterans. And again, the challenges here, you know, they cut across. And maybe what I can say in summary before I go to the summary of the challenge is that in Program 3, where the department has taken a proactive initiative to do Operation Chasseur, we begin to see an increase in numbers of the benefit being taken by military veterans. So now with the easing of restrictions, I think we are going to improve on how then we disperse this benefit. And especially now with the model that the department is beginning to implement of decentralization and using our provincial offices more effectively, I think we are going to improve in terms of this benefit. And then if we then go to the next slide, which talks to the summary really of the key challenges, especially for 2020-21 financial year, is that COVID-19 pandemic has severely affected our operations. But however, with the vaccine now being available and we begin to see numbers going down, and we begin to see now the restrictions being eased, we hope that we'll improve in that. I think we've got a lot of projects that are in the pipeline. And when we begin to implement these projects, we are going to begin to see a lot of impact in terms of uptake by military veterans. And these projects, you know, the planning of these projects has been better now, and we really want, when we begin to implement these projects, to improve in terms of how we have been doing this. And in terms of mitigation, I think I indicated that we are beginning to use now our provinces better. And furthermore, we want, as I indicated, that we've got a lot of projects in the pipeline, but we are fast-tracking in terms of approval, so that they can have an impact in terms of the benefits. Then when we move then to the database, this is a database, Chair and Honorable Members, that, you know, has information of military veterans. And we note the challenge that has been there in the department, that it has not been implemented in a very long time. But in this financial year, there are mitigating activities that will see us now implementing a proper integrated solution that will see the department, you know, dealing with most of the challenges that have been highlighted, you know, in the slides that I've presented, you know, about. One of the issues is the fact that we are now, as a department, cleaning up the database. And there was a need for us as a department to do that because there were a number of concerns that were raised by military veterans and also internally in the department. And these have been listed here to say that some of the applicants registered on the database and are suspected not to be military veterans. And dependents of the deceased NSF military veterans who are registered as main members are registered as main members as a result of the demobilization process. So we need to clean those and correct those things. We've also got reserve force members who are registered in the database. We need, as a department, to ensure that we are giving benefits to the correct people. We need to confirm the relationship of the dependents to the main members. To a certain effect, in the education support, the department, I think about a year or 2 years back, began to be asking for unabridged certificates so that we are able to verify, you know, to ensure that we are giving the benefits to the right people. And then uncategorized data. This, in terms of data analysis, it does not help us as a department. And when we are required to report, it gives us problems and there are gaps in the data. So we need to clean it up to ensure that all the information is available. And of course, we need to update contact details. And we must also ensure that we correct the ID numbers. Here we are working with the Department of Home Affairs. They've been helping us to ensure that, especially when military veterans are deceased, we're able then to link up with Home Affairs to be able to ensure that we record that properly. And then when we look then at the statistics in terms of who is in the database, this is just a summary of who is in the database. We've got 62,461 military veterans currently in the database. And this is just a breakdown of where they reside and in terms of the forces. And then when we move to the next slide, here we're just talking about now what we want to see ourselves going forward as a department. And this is what we're implementing currently as a department to ensure that there's credibility in the database. We want to improve in terms of signature specimens. And we are going to introduce biometrics so that anyone who accesses the database is identifiable, so that no one can simply just walk into the database and do whatever they want to do without being identified by the database. And we also internally want to segregate duties and user rights so that we know that who approves at what particular point in time. And we are, as I indicated, in this financial year, I think there is a work plan that we have developed which will see this solution live in November of this financial year. We are now building a robust database which will see the solution going live around November. And also for security we are also going to implement a database backup solution. Should something go wrong or the building burns down, we must be able to retrieve this particular information. And then in terms of the next slide, this is now the program that we have developed for ourselves for this year that will ensure that we get to a stage where this solution is launched. We are in consultation with CETA. There's a lot of work that has been done there. We had challenges in the past with working with CETA, but I think we have a new team now at CETA that is working on this, and we have put project governance structures in place, and the work is underway. I must say that we are quite satisfied with the work that is currently ongoing. Hence, we are saying we are quite comfortable that by November 2021, we'll see a live solution going on. And we have an agreement with CETA which says that we are not going to pay for the development of this solution. However, for the usage of the solution, that's when now we are going to start paying as a department. Chair, this was the presentation from the department. Chair and honorable members, I thank you for your attention. Thanks, DDG.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, that is the presentation from DMV in response to the request from the Select Committee. Honorable Chair, please allow me to introduce that we have from the department side our CFO, Mr. Ndlovu. We also have the Chief Director, SES, Mr. Musi. Over to you, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mapu and Mr. Siengo. I think the unfortunate thing about a virtual platform is you somehow exercise your right not to put on your video. But I think it's important for us as the Select Committee to actually see you so we know who has actually briefed us as well. Maybe you could just greet us so you appear on the screen. We have Meh Mapu, yes. You can unmute yourself.
Yes, Chair.
Okay. And then Mr. Siengo.
Yes. Okay. Yes, Chair.
No, thank you for indulging me and the committee on this. And let me thank you once again for your presentation. And I'm sure even when the other members from the department address the committee, we'll also have an opportunity to see them. And I think as members address you as well, you would have an opportunity to know the members of the Select Committee. Our members, let me open it up for questions of clarity and or discussions. Oh, wow. That you may have. I see members have already raised their hands. Thank you for that. If I may just look at the order that has raised, we have Honorable Bidogu, Honorable Mtetwa, Honorable Seleku, Honorable Motsanai. Are there any other honorable members who may not be able to use the raise the hand function that would like to ask any questions? Okay. But if you do at any point after these deliberations are amended, you may ask any question or make any other input that you would like to make. Let me start with Honorable Zidobo.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I really don't know where to start. Firstly, let me welcome the presentation. Albeit I pick up a lot of limitations or shortcomings in the presentation. Firstly, let's agree. This year marks the 27th year since the advent of our new democratic dispensation. Full 27 years. And the Military Veteran Act was promulgated in 2011. And the clear purpose was to ensure that we protect, support, and promote the welfare of those who pay the price in bringing about freedom in our land, to support those who distinguish themselves, especially to ensure that we are a free country. Any debt that we owe as living beings is to those people who fought for the freedom in our land. Now, since 10 years ago, in my view, just based on this presentation and the information that I have, our military veterans are not taken care of. If this is what is presented before us, I think we must fear for the West. 10 years after the act was promulgated, we find ourselves in this situation. This department doesn't impact whatsoever in supporting the military veterans. We know the names of these military veterans. We know their faces. We know the kind of wrong that they did. Most of them die as paupers. Most of them live in despicable conditions. But we have a department that is supposed to take care of them. And this for me is disgraceful. Now, Chair, the limitations for me in terms of this presentation, I needed to know what is the structure of this department, the military veteran. I can see that there's a DG, there's DDGs, there's CFO, there's chief directors. I want to know how much I'm paying all of these people. I want to know what is the structure of this department. That, in my view, is doing little to take care of the people. I want to also know, Chair, what is the budget for this department? With all the programs, 11 programs that were mentioned here, that the department was supposed to unfold and ensure that it takes care of its military veterans. According to this presentation, about 5 projects are unfolded, whether it's health, it is education, and then the most important one, pensions for these people, it is not taken care of. And for me, this is a very, very serious problem. We want to know what is the budget of this department. And this is the second point that I'm missing in this presentation, and I will share. The third one is the plan on how, with important milestones, a plan with key performance areas and key performance indicators on when and how they are going to achieve all of these things. It is pity that the minister is not here. I would have loved the minister to be here to answer to this particular question. We cannot afford a situation whereby our veterans, our military veterans, are not supported. Even this presentation does tell us about some coordinators. It means the person who is in Bizana or who is in Ziras, if he wants to read the department, he can only go to Pretoria. Or some coordinator that this thing needs to be explained. It cannot be accepted. We know people who die every day, and they are military veterans. I speak in here of those that I know who are in the MK, who gone to a season. We bury them all the time, and those who were in the self-defense units, who fought for the freedom in our land. They are not taken care of. They are frustrated. They are unemployed. whereas we have a department that is supposed to help them. And in my view, it's not helping them as it suits. The systems were put in place properly, formally, legally, by the promulgation of the Act of 2011. It is 10 years down the line. Some of them don't even have houses. And this program of the Department of Human Settlement is not even explained properly. What is happening? Why can't they be facilitated? And for me, this is unacceptable. These are the things that we need to address, Chair. And in my view, I think we need to follow everything about the department, especially its structure, its budget, and its strategic plans in terms of what is it that it is doing to support the military veterans. And you can even see the presentation. This is cute. There are those provinces that have one or two people, three people, and other provinces are advantaged. And I don't understand why. If this department has got to start somewhere, it must start there in Zikas. There are people who were part, 90% of them were part of what was called impunity detachment. And then these are the people who are suffering, who in my view are not taken care of. And I think a serious urgent intervention is needed for this department, because we cannot allow this situation to go unattended, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Zidobu. Okay, Honorable Motsamai.
Mketwa,
yes. I see your hand was up. You put it down, but you were next, right? Honorable Mketwa.
Thank you very much, Chair. Firstly, let me acknowledge the presentation. It had assisted us in some of the information that one was having some challenge questions, especially special questions on it. But I just want to ask one or two things, Chair. In your program 3, you indicated, I don't know whether they can flag for me program 3, there are issues there that they raise, in particular where they regard on the on the veteran that is unknown, but there is a number. It's written 8, but unknown. Are these unknown, those veterans that are still struggling to get into your database because of lack of information or others? What's exactly this unknown, if I may be explained that? And if possible, in terms of your data, I'm happy that now you're building up a very clean data that is going to be understood by everybody. In your data, how many of those veterans that are still outside your basket that you still had to put it in, and due to other logistical information, they are still not yet in? Is it possible that you can give us a number so that we can intervene? This is in line with the question of Mr. Dodov, that you may find that a lot of these veterans that we are known, that we are known of by us, are still struggling outside there, and they are still telling us that they are being pushed to left and right. They don't know. Today they want this information, tomorrow is that. What are the difficulties to get these people into the database? And those that are in the database, who are these people that are coming in unknown? And what is their claim? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tito. Honorable Matanai?
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Chairperson, you see, here we are talking about the people who fought for the land, the people who bring us where we are, the military veterans. These people are suffering, Chairperson. If you can visit the Department of Military Veterans in Pretoria, because it's the only head office in 9 provinces, which is in Hatfield, in Pretoria, where you will find our people being turned back to their places. Some of these people, they are from KwaZulu-Natal, some from Mpumalanga, some from Limpopo, all over these 9 provinces. We have only head office, which is in Pretoria. We don't have satellite offices within the country, so that the people who are from Limpopo can be helped. You will find that when you go to, you are coming from Eastern Cape and you go to Cape Town, you will find that the department, who people are working at the department, they said, we cannot help you with your dependent because we are going for a funeral and you don't have money. There was an SRD in department which was given 1,200, which was given to the military veterans. That was helping the military veterans for transport and so on. There's nothing like that now. They don't benefit anything about that. And I just want to say something, Chair. The benefit of the military veterans, 2016-2017, the department were paying the dependent 42,500 for the student to attend school. Now, the department is paying the student 20,000. And all that schools, they will simply say, we cannot take your child because on this school we want 21,000 or 21,500. And they will simply say, no, we can't. The department will simply say, the military veteran will provide the money of the second. But those military veterans are not working. Another thing, Chairperson, about the issue of the houses of the military veterans. There are plenty of houses which are being sold to the non-military veterans. And on those houses, when the military veterans report to the department that we are staying in the houses and the people have occupied, when you get in the military veteran houses, there's a showroom, the house that is being called the showroom, to show the people this house is made for the military veterans, is going to be like this. People are sold those houses to the non-military veterans, and the department doesn't take any action. And another thing, Chairperson, I fail to understand, there's an information which was leaked about 44 billion of corruption on the Department of Military Veterans, where there's a security company called Cyber Security, which was paid 22,580,067 rand. But there's nothing that they've mentioned about the people who had the money at the military veteran, and they have never even mentioned why the money of the military veteran of the student were cut to this amount. Another thing, military veterans are not working total. At the Department of Military Veteran, there are soldiers who are working at the Department of Military Veteran, where the military veteran were supposed to be working at the gate, they know who is a military veteran and who is not a military veteran. But there are only soldiers who are guarding the place. There are soldiers who are working within the Department of Military Veteran who cannot even assist the military veteran. When you ask why this thing is happening, because I was keeping a complaint and asking all the directors who were there, who were working on that department, they were using the security companies which were paid by the very same person who is there, the Honorable Mafu, who knows about those people. I went there and said, these people are not right to work here. Let's put the military veterans because they are not working. When you go to the plaza, when you go to all these municipalities, there are the offices of the military veterans. Why the department doesn't intervene so that these people can get an employment? They have 62,000 military veterans. But now, why they are failing to pay for their dependent? When you go to the Sky City here next to me,
The students have been removed from the school from the Department of Military Veterans because they say the Department of the Military Veterans cannot pay for you. I even talked to the director, Chief Director Musi, who is also there. But he assists, but when he assists to pay 20,000 or 40,000 for two children, what about that 6,000 that remain for a person who cannot pay for that 6,000 because she's not working? There is a very serious problem of the military veteran. The same here next to me. Sam is dying for 5 years. He was complaining about electricity. He is using oxygen pipe. At his house, there's no electricity. And when you go and ask the department, I call a lot of people from the department, even the deputy minister. I told him that this man doesn't have electric on his house. But on other houses, there is a non-military veteran who are staying. Why don't you take those people and bring them that side? He don't even have food. Most of these people, they don't have food to eat because they are not working. They have only houses. They cannot even buy a bed to sleep on that bed. They are using these jars. Some of them, they are using jars to sleep with them. But they own houses. Can we intervene on this? Chairperson, I would like we must go to do oversight at the Department of Military Veterans and see what is happening there. There's a big problem that side. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Motsumai. Honourable Bartlett?
Chair? Sorry, Chair, we're not able to open the video. Most of the comrades covered me on the questions that I wanted to ask. But I also agree with the former speakers on the treatment of the military veterans. Mine was just declared on the issue of the housing because I've seen most of the provinces, especially the newly built houses, that's only zero. But I think Comrade Dodovo covered me on that. Né? And then I just want to make a suggestion. Maybe I know they are talking about the structures and the CEOs and the directors, but why don't they have proper structures in provinces? Because really, when the veterans in our province have problems, then they are coming to us to solve the problems. And we know, as members of parliament, we can't go too deep in this, but we must assist them. But I don't want to raise other issues. And especially an issue on the benefits of the funerals, the funeral policy. Maybe we can just give clarity on that one also. Thanks, Chair. I don't want to repeat what the other comrades have said. So, sorry, the other honorable members have said.
Thank you, Honorable Bartlett. Honorable
Saleto? Good morning, Chair. Good morning to the honorable members and to members from the department. Chair, firstly, let me welcome the presentation. And I want to use the right tone of voice so that I am clear in terms of my questions of clarity. Firstly, Chair, there is one thing that is lacking in this presentation is the issue of the SRD, the Social Relief of Distressed Funding. There is no mention of it, and we need to know more about it. And also, Chair, the other thing that is also unfortunate is that we find that there is acting directors within this particular department, and we don't know how long they have been acting, and when are they going to capacitate this department? And Chair, and I just want to share an experience that I had with military veterans when I was a chairperson of human settlements in a particular municipality in Western Cape. And I want the department to assist me. Chair, what we tend to find that the department don't go to these municipalities and engage with them on issues of human settlement. It is the military veterans themselves or people that claim to represent the those particular military vets, because they are different forces. So each and every force will affiliate to a certain structure, and then another force will affiliate to another structure. And then when you engage with the department, and then the department will tell you, no, don't listen to these people. The only structure that is recognized is this particular structure. So my question is, have the department dealt with this issue, you know, of making sure that when people engage with these municipalities, that it is not people that are not known, you know, and who should actually engage with them? And Chair, also what is important is that, Chair, if we don't fix the issue of the accreditation of these military vets, and then we don't deal with the issue of the credibility and the integrity of this database, we will never address the issues of military veterans. And Chair, I can clearly say to you that there is a lot of military vets that don't get their benefits. And it's not their own doing. The problem lies with their data, with the database. You know, when they phone Pretoria, they don't get through. And as a result, when opportunities are given there, especially on housing, municipalities all over the country build houses on a yearly basis. But if the military vet that claim to be a military vet is not accredited and is not on the database, that person is not going to be given that opportunity. And also, Chair, what we are not hearing from this presentation is also that, you know, we are talking about the engagement with national and provinces. But unfortunately, Chair, the development happens on the ground. The presentation does not tell us how many municipalities has actually agreed on MOUs when it comes to the issue of human settlements. So I would just like the department to give us a history on saying how many municipalities have they engaged, specifically in the Western Cape, because we've got about 30 municipalities in the Western Cape. We've got one metro, we've got 5 district municipalities, and then we've got 24 local, which is B municipalities within the province. But if you are going to have one provincial coordinator within a province, how do you expect to engage all 30 municipalities? How are you going to engage with them? And then those are the questions that I'm sitting with. Chair, also, what is also worrisome is the assistance that is given to military vets when it comes to the issue job opportunities. Can the department just try to explain more in terms of what is meant by, you know, assistance in terms of job opportunities? But you'll find that in the Northwest there's about 100. It's either advice or it's giving advice and job opportunities, or in the Northwest there's about 100. But what is lacking, Chair, is the different forces, and then they will say not applicable, and then they will look at challenges and say it's not applicable. It can never be acceptable, Chair, when it comes to job opportunities of businesses, because they must be able to tell us as members of parliament how many military vets have been assisted to establish their own businesses, and to which force do they belong to, so that we have an understanding, so that we can see, because which military veterans are given preference by government and which military vets are not given preference. So when that detail is lacking, then it raises some questions as to why it's, when it comes to business opportunities, that some information is not given. You should be able to tell us how many of these military vets are actually operating business, and from which force are they, so that we can have an understanding. Also, Chair, in terms of other benefits, Chair, that are lacking. And it's unfortunate that the Minister is not here. And it's our first engagement in the sixth Parliament. And then if you read in terms of our briefing from the previous fifth Parliament, the Minister has not even attended once. In the fifth Parliament, when when members dealt with the issue of military vets, the Minister was nowhere. And we are starting with our first engagement, the Minister is still not here, and there's not even a deputy minister. So those actions might raise the question of how serious do they take the issue of military vets? If for 5 years they don't engage with select committees, and now we are starting in the sixth Parliament, she's also not here. So, Chair, I think we will have to have another engagement so that they can break down, in terms of the information that is currently lacking in terms of this, so that they can give us a breakdown in terms of their staff component in all these provinces. Because it can never be right that one province has got more warm bodies than other provinces. So why does one province have preference than other provinces? Because I believe all military vets should be treated the same and they should be given the same issues. Also, Chair, in terms of the issue of military vets that are not on the database, of military vets that has passed away, can the department give us an indication as how many military vets actually passed away without being given their duly, deserving benefits due to the fact that there are challenges within the department? And because I appreciate the fact that it's COVID. COVID did not just give the department problems. COVID just added problems that were already there. It just actually escalated the problem that the department has been facing. So people cannot come to us and tell us due to COVID is still ongoing. Because if you go back in terms of the last financial years, you'll find that there has not been any progress made. There's always been challenges. And what COVID has done is just to expose the department in terms of their non-performance. And there are no clear plans as to how this department is going to make sure that they do actually do what is expected from them. And also, Chair, in terms of the bursaries like that are given to children of military veterans, one would always like to hear about success stories. Don't just tell me that, I've given someone a bursary, and after that person has been given a bursary, and this is how many people have been able to be employed, Because that's what we tend to do as government. We say, we've given you an opportunity to be on EPWP. And then after 3 months, you go and sit at home. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Seleku. Honorable Chabeleng, I saw your hand up at some point, but I also know you were kicked out of the system. I'm not sure if you've covered or do you still have any question or comment you would like to make? Honorable Chabeleng?
Yes, thanks, Chair. Am I audible?
Yes, you are. Please continue.
Yeah, my reception is very poor. Thanks a lot. I agree with all the points raised by the members, particularly Dodogo, Honorable Dodogo, and all those who spoke after him. But the issues raised by Ntate Seleku, I think are very important because they actually show that we represent different formations, even in Parliament. And by that, our responsibility as a committee is to ensure that those who benefit must be the right people to benefit. We need to, again, look at the Military Veterans Act and see if it needs some tweaking. Because according to me, those who are able to get pensions who were employed by the South African Defense Force and all the TBV forces are getting their pensions. they made contributions in the, they were paid, you know, they made their own contributions, that they have their own pensions. Now, this is going to be an addition on top of what they're earning. So we need to look at the, as the act. If we say it's everybody who has ever been in an army, then it's okay. But we need to be able to define and redefine it. And how do we ensure that we, because sometimes when people look at this military veterans, they sometimes forget that the self-defense units in the Gauteng region were part of the military detachments of Umkhonto we Sizwe. And so, but at the same time, I'd like to know, Chairperson, is there no capacity in the ministry or in the department, let me say, capacity to develop a database on their own? I think they must be having a department that deals with ICT. You want to tell me that those people who are hired in them, none who are employed in that division, none of them can do a database, something like the old D-Base 4, because I think it can actually capture all the information that we need in terms of data. And then they can, using their new technologies, they can increase the security walls for the information not to be hacked and all those kinds of things. I don't see any reason for us to purchase or to purchase a system that we have in the department. And how much is that thing going to cost if we are to use it? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much once again for all other honourable members who have raised questions but also made certain comments. I think I want to agree as well with Honourable Dodoro that and other members who have related sentiments with regard to the unavailability of the minister. And on members, I think Honourable Matamai has also indicated that I think there is that need for us as well to go further and do oversight over the department itself. While our interest is, even in terms of this session, has also been largely in terms of provinces. But clearly the existence of the department, its budget, its functions, the impact it has on military veterans and its actual outcomes, I think these are matters that we do need the minister to elaborate on our responsibility as well in terms of our oversight work, in terms of executive accountability. We hold the minister accountable, I think when it comes to officials, it's another ball game. However, I have a few questions. I think some of it has already been covered, but I think around the benefits that relate to health, and as it comes out in terms of the slide 9, where you elaborate on challenges in the delivery of benefits, the health benefits largely comes through the South African Military Health Service facility. And you indicate that some of the challenges relate to the lack of medical resources, the issue relating to patient transport challenges, especially where the facilities are far from military veterans or the communities they live, and also when the patient's condition warrants that there's a need to dispatch an ambulance. But given these challenges, maybe if you could just elaborate what is being done to address these challenges. And I think with regard to the houses, you do concur to what we've been saying around the invasion of houses by military veterans, and that there's a lack of an integrated strategy to deal with these invasions. And the lack of beneficiation of involving military veterans in the construction of their houses. Just in terms of this issue of health and housing, it has been a critical concern of the committee during the first parliament. But I think it's important that the department also explains what is being done to address the challenges on a provincial basis. I know in terms of your presentation, you indicated the issue that you have a better relationship with the Department of Human Settlements, that you have regular engagement with bilateral. But I think what we would like to also know is whether you have server level agreements with the, between yourself and all provincial human settlement departments, whether they exist or not, whether you have regular interactions with the Department of Human Settlements at a national or provincial level to ensure that the housing needs for veterans are met. And this is besides the status of your database. And also what, I know you mentioned you do monitoring, but what monitoring and evaluation mechanisms does the department do to ensure that, that benefits are reaching the actual military veterans themselves? And you mentioned the 252 mortgage loan settlements in slide 9 as well. You've indicated that it's demand driven and if a military veteran qualifies, he settles. But maybe just also indicate what is the challenges with regard to this, and especially with regard to this and in relation to your database, because your database is not complete. But you also mentioned that in Mpumalanga you have a good working relationship. There aren't that many challenges. Perhaps also elaborate, I mean, what makes Mpumalanga different? I mean, what else contributes to making your engagement in Mpumalanga different with other provinces where you experience more challenges? And then also, I think what the database members have covered is quite sufficiently, but you state in your solution from slide 26 that the solution to the database will be implemented by November 2021. But maybe give an indication of between now and then, what steps have you put in place for the year to end that the benefits reach the correct military veterans in respect of the provincial distribution of benefits prior to this date. And obviously, members have raised issues around provincial offices, but are these provincial offices sufficiently capacitated to ensure benefits are being distributed effectively, and what are the challenges that you encounter at the provincial level in terms of distribution of benefits to military veterans? I think, let me pause there and allow the department to respond where they can. I understand there are some matters you might not be able to respond to, which would require the minister, but please, the floor is yours. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much, honorable members. I would want to first indicate that the way the department is structured is to disperse 11 benefits to more than 85,000 military veterans, excluding their benefits. And with a budget which is far less, that's over half a million, is a challenge. No, just half a billion is a challenge on its own. As a strategy to mitigate that, honorable members, the department approach the following provincial premier's offices. We started with Mpumalanga, with an attempt to have a collaborated efforts in addressing issues of military veterans. And I'll just make an example with health. we were saying there are 3 military hospitals in the country, and that it is almost impossible for those 3 military hospitals, which one is in Western Cape, one in Free State, and one in Gauteng, to actually service all military veterans. We presented and attempted to sign a protocol agreement with Mpumalanga. Unfortunately, it did not see the light of the day. We then went and approached Northwest. We also did not succeed. We then approached a Gauteng government. We signed an MOU, and with that, the benefits are such that over 300 job opportunities are created by the government of Gauteng under the office of the coordinated by the office of the premier. We also attempted with Northern Cape. We haven't been successful. Eastern Cape, we signed a protocol agreement, and the benefits are very clear. You can see them. We are currently discussing with Free State Department, province, as well as KZN. Honorable members, I do want to indicate that the department does have a footprint in all provinces, excluding Gauteng, excluding KZN, and Limpopo. And the reason for that, would have wanted to move with speed, but unfortunately, this is a mandate of Public Works, and we rely on Public Works to actually have lease agreements signed. We are not allowed to negotiate that on our own. But I do want to indicate, honorable members, that you are correct to observe or to indicate the issues of capacities. In those offices, we are still challenged in terms of human capital, in terms of the approved organogram. There are only 3 people who are supposed to be sitting in provinces. And the department, through the service delivery model, which will then inform the redesigning of the departmental organizational structure, we are hopeful that we will be able to address the issues of human capital so that the head office is busy with policies, with strategies, with monitoring and evaluation, and giving support to provinces, where you'll find that provinces are more resourced in terms of human capital than the national office. It is a shortcoming that is informed by the current approved structure, and the department is actually in the process of engaging and processing that. Honorable members, I would request, and I'll start with the CFO, to give a sense of what the budget is all about, and then that will be followed by Mr. Siengo, who's going to touch on the issues of how the department is structured. Realizing that, of course, that our structure, the approved organogram, is not responsive to the work that is supposed to be done by the department. And I'll make just an example. With the pension benefit, there is no warm body attached to that benefit. With public transport, there is no warm body attached to that. And that is why I have said the department is busy with reviewing the organogram so that we can actually resource different benefits for them to be responsive to all benefits. I will also then ask Mr. Matafu to deal with issues of database, and please, Mr. Matafu, explain to honorable members the challenges that the department is faced with in terms of the database. I would then ask Mr. Musi to deal with issues of housing and any other issue raised that relates to his portfolio. I will also ask Caroline, who has joined us, to actually assist with the issues of health care and wellness. Honourable members, present in this meeting is the PLO of the Minister, Mr. Ngabinde, and I'm sure he has noted the issue raised and that you will communicate them back to the Ministry, but also from the departmental side, we will advise the Ministry of the issues raised. Thank you for now. Over to you, CFO. And please show your face.
Thank you, Member Fu. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. And good morning to my fellow colleagues. Can I just confirm, am I audible?
You're audible, you're not visible.
I'm not too sure with, because I've switched the camera on from my side. I would like them to just call ICT to assist me in that regard, but I would request to proceed with the
assistance. We can see you.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. Thanks, Chair. Just to confirm at a very high level, Chair, I can confirm that the department was appropriated with 683 million for the 2020-21 financial year, which is then confirmed as 654 million moving into the 2021-22 financial year. However, Chair, I must just then state, in line with the COVID-19 challenges, with the financial stimulus in the national government and in line with all the cuts that happened across all government departments, then the budget was reduced from 683 million to about 480 million in the current financial year. Of the 680 million, 370 million is allocated for military veterans benefits. Those military veterans benefits is what the colleagues have then indicated in terms of what we were able to then disperse within the current financial year and what we have not been able to then realize, which was mainly transport and pension. And I can just confirm through you, Chair, that of the 683 million, allocation for the cost of employees was 140 million, which was subsequently reduced to 129 million, in line with the financial constraints that are observed within the national government. So I'd like to say at a high level, those are the numbers I can confirm, Chair. But should the select committee request additional information, that information will be availed in writing. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Nemas.
Thank you, CFO. Can we then have Mr. Siengo on the issues of planning, maybe touch on issues raised around that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, EDG and Chair. In terms of the structure itself, I think maybe let me start with a bit of a background, Chair, to say that when the task team report was produced before the promulgation of the Act, it was envisaged that, you know, the mandate of the department would be to facilitate and coordinate, that is, the delivery of the identified benefits in terms of the Military Veterans Act. So the structure then at that particular point in time, which was approved in 2010, was meant then to assist the department to respond to that, to ensure that it facilitates and coordinates, meaning that it's even quite visible in the Act where we are saying that we are going to be using other state organs to assist us to deliver these benefits where possible. And as we speak, what has since happened in the department is that the department has then since moved into the space where it began to deliver these particular benefits. To the extent that the structure that was approved then in 2010 and was then not responsive to what the department was actually doing. Why I'm saying not responsive, but Mrs. Mafu has reflected on this to say that you would see that where there are areas where, you know, officials are supposed to be interacting with veterans, what we would call service centers or service level kind of officials. The department is very thin on those in those areas, to the extent that in some benefits like pension, subsidized transport, you don't have any official allocated to those. Not because it's because there are no warm bodies to allocate to those areas. As we speak, the approved organogram of the department has 169 posts, which are supposed to now to serve, you know, all 11 benefits. And out of the, you know, 169 posts, at some point, okay, let me say, out of those 169 posts, 102 of those approved posts are sitting in the administration program, which is mostly support environment. And then only, then the rest, I think 21 of those are sitting in the socio-economic support, which has most of these benefits. And 46 of those is all in the empowerment and stakeholder management. With that 46 in the empowerment and stakeholder management branch, it includes then the officials that are sitting in the provinces, as indicated earlier on. What then the department has done in the past to try and augment the shortage or the challenge is that there's been a number of contract workers that have been in the department. I think as of the end of last year, we had about over 60 contract workers. And that has been flagged as a problem in the department to say that because these are contracts that are annually kind of reviewed. And AG, National Treasury, has flagged us in terms of, you know, us having such a number of contract workers. So so that's the kind of a structure that we have in the department at a very high level. And maybe what I can say is that 13% of the whole 169 approved in the organogram is are senior management officials. And 11% is middle management, and 29% it's mostly specialized kind of in specialized areas where they mostly interact with veterans. And then level skilled, about from level 3 to 5, it's half of the establishment in the department.
Thank you.
So that's the status of the organogram. In terms of then, I think one of the issues that was raised was, if I can address also that, was acting positions. Why so much acting? That has been acknowledged, and we are currently addressing that. The accounting officer's position has been advertised, and currently the shortlisting that is being undertaken. Some senior management posts were advertised now in February. I think it's HR, legal, and heritage and memorial, if I'm something right. So also over the next coming weeks, the department is going to be advertising the two deputy director general positions, which is corporate services and socio-economic support, so that to ensure that at a leadership level, the department is stable. And one other exercise that we're undertaking now, because we have realized that the structure or the organogram is a problem, we are now in the process of reviewing our organogram, and we are being assisted in that process by the Department of Public Service Administration, working together with National Treasury, to see how then we can respond to the gaps and challenges that have been there in the past. The service delivery model, which is a precursor to the functional structure, has been approved by the Department of Public Service Administration. We are now working with the DPSA to actually work on the functional structure, which is going to assist us now to respond to the challenges that have been mentioned. And in terms of then the planning instruments, honorable members and chair, we do have a 5-year strategic plan that was tabled in Parliament, which has been approved. And on annual, we are now about to present our annual performance plan. And perhaps with the indulgence from the leader in the department, when our next engagement comes, I'm sure we can then present that plan to the select committee, so that they can see how we've then planned for the delivery of the benefits for the 2021-22 financial year, and all the indicators and the mechanisms that we have defined, and how then we are going to implement issues that are talking to the decentralization of the provinces and municipalities. I think I will stop there for now, DDG. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Siengo. CFO, can you come back and address the issue of 4 billion we have against cyber security? Thanks. Then Mr. Matafu should then come in on issues of database.
Sorry, may you just clarify for me so that I can respond appropriately to the select committee, please?
Honorable member, Mr. Mutamai indicated that there is 4 billion that the department should at least indicate as to where we are at that was allocated for cyber security.
Okay, ma'am. Officially speaking, ma'am, I'm not aware, because the ICT plan is in front of me, and we don't have a 4 billion allocation for cybersecurity as per the official notes that I have. Maybe then, ma'am, if we can be provided further information so that we can clarify further. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, CFO. Mr. Matsafu, over to you.
Am I visible?
Yes, you are.
Yes, good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, TDG and colleagues. I'm going to respond to the questions that I picked up directly raised around the database and try to give the overall challenges around the database. The first question that I noted was from Honorable Mteta around how many people are still outside the basket or outside the database. I think I understood it to mean that. And then there was the question of also about what steps are we taking whilst we are busy developing the database to ensure that the database is running correctly. Now, I want to provide this summary so that I can answer this question. The main challenge is with the data in the database. That's the major challenge of the database, and this challenge is raising or leading to a number of questions being asked about the authenticity of that data, the acceptability of the data, the credibility of the data, and ultimately the security, whether that data is database is secure enough to safeguard the data that is on it. Now we are aware of these challenges, and then we are trying to put measures in place. But before that, let me just provide the figure in terms of how many people are outside the database that still need to get inside. We are currently having, we've recorded about 6,000. Let's just put it around that because it's 5,921, but there are new applications that have since come into the department which will increase the number. And that is the number that is going to form part of the verification process. The brief on the verification process is that it has happened several times in the past, but there is a pending verification process that has to happen now. And then the update on that is that the terms of reference for that verification process has been set, and the process will be handled, but is being handled outside the department itself through the Ministry of Defense and Military Veterans. And then also in the, with regard to the data, there are instances of incomplete information in the database where you find that only an ID is provided, but then one doesn't know from which formation or the applicant is from, or sometimes the ID is not provided, and then only the information, but the forms are also incomplete. So there are those gaps that needs to be rectified with regard to the database, and then we are working on that. And then also the other major challenge which is impacting the disbursement of benefits is around the manual processes regarding to the disbursement of the benefits. We are trying to automate as much as we can in terms of the current situation that we are facing. We are having, we are using an access database. We are trying to make some of the processes automated, and we are also trying to invoke the advanced Excel features that will assist in the current situation. But this situation, we are hoping that we'll be addressing as the year progresses through the development of the fully fledged database using modern technology. So this challenge alone results in challenges with reporting because of the manual processes. There could be typo errors when people are trying to enter some figures and that, but mostly where we had automated the reporting, we've seen improvement in terms of the reporting because the manual intervention is not that much. So that is, in short, the major challenge with the database. And we've responded to that question that was saying, which steps are we taking? That is what I've said about trying to put segregation of duties in place so that one person cannot be a player and a referee at the same time, not registering a person or capturing a person on the database, quality assuring, and also authorizing. So we've put that in place, and then at least the processes are separated. And then also the use of the advanced features of what on the software that we're having currently, so that we can then make sure that the security is enhanced around the database. So we will then provide an update as the verification process starts as to how many people have been rejected or accepted, and then also on these new applications, what is going to be dealt with. I think in summary, that addresses the challenges around the database. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Matsafu. I will then invite Mr. Musi to talk to issues of housing, SRD, education, transport, and any issue that, and pension. Over to you, Mr. Musi.
Good day, honorable members. My name is indicated, I'm Bulelo Musi. I'm chief director responsible for what is called socioeconomic support, which includes housing, education, pension, access to public transport, as well as SRD. And to the best of my ability, I'll try to answer all the questions raised by honorable members with regard to those portfolios. But perhaps to foreground my answers, I would like to indulge the members to my observation that Honorable China Dodovu raised overarching issues of observation, which we have taken care of, or we've noted. He raised a very poignant question about the fact that we are 27 years in democracy. And obviously what that raises is a broader question beyond DMV, because at the time there was no DMV. It raises a broader question of the fact that perhaps government ought to look at doing more to be able to address the issues that are pertinent which have been raised today. He further went on to make an overarching statement that the department is about 10 years old, which is the area where I'm going to start from in responding to all the questions. So it's not necessarily covering 27 years, it's covering 10 years. And even in 10 years, I'll specify which benefit started when and what we're doing, what the challenges are, and how we're trying to deal with them. Lastly, as an overarching statement, Chair, I think my colleagues, the DDG and the other colleagues have covered the areas that relate to broader organizational challenges around which we are trying to deliver these 11 benefits to the military veterans. I will not repeat anything they have said. Having made those overarching statements, let me start by firstly dealing with the education support. I must indicate that it's one of the most difficult areas of us trying to deliver this benefit for many areas in which part was alluded to, use of manual systems, lack of automation, capacity challenges. We are working with a staff complement of four people at national office who are permanent. And then we have some contract workers from time to time who are helping. That is beginning to have an impact on how far we can go. And it is not necessarily an excuse. It's a fact, and it's also informed by the structural deficiencies that have been alluded to by Mr. Soyango. Maybe let me touch this issue from the point of view that we started dispersing this benefit of education in 2012, which means 2 years after the existence of the department. In 2012-2013 financial year, we actually supported 200 students and learners, 100 at tertiary and 100 at basic. That number increased exponentially, notwithstanding the challenges. As we speak today, we're supporting not less than 3,300 students and learners. And to that extent, we think, notwithstanding the challenges, we have made significant strides. However, we also note the fact that the members are raising the fact that we can do more. And indeed, it is our understanding that with all challenges being addressed, we can do more and we are working towards doing more. And it's in that context that we have welcomed the presidential task team, which is also beset with how best can they beef up the capacity of the department to be able to deliver better on all benefits, including education. And as we speak now, the presidential task team is meeting led by the deputy president, the ministers, the DGs and them, precisely to make decisive interventions that we think are going to take us to another level in terms of how we deliver on the mandate. So that's on education. Housing. This benefit started in 2012 as well. I'm sure Honorable Dodovu can testify. He was still in Northwest at the time. I remember that if I'm not wrong, he was a mayor of Matosani. That period, or around that period, he was based in around areas of Klekto, where we started to deliver to the first two beneficiaries of the Second World War. We started with two houses in 2012. The program started slowly, and maybe let me explain some of the challenges which partly also addressing and have also been elevated to the presidential task team. When we started, we had a very limited budget. In light of the fact that, to remind members, the fundamental duty of the department is to coordinate and facilitate. We don't deliver houses. It is human settlement that delivers. We top up in order to meet the specifications agreed upon in the Regulation 14 of the Act, as well as the policy MOU and SLA we have with the Department of Human Settlement to deliver 50 square meter, which is distinct from an RDP stroke BNG house of 40 square meters. Within the design of that delivery, it is human settlement that will allocate certain houses in projects, and then we top up for military veterans in a quota allocated to us. If they're building 1,000 houses, and they advise us that in 1,000 they will give us 100, we then focus on top up of that 100. We top up with 100, with 78,000 to make it a 50 square meter house. That is our delivery design and model. So we're highly reliant on the Department of Human Settlement to assist us to deliver effectively. From 2012, when we started with two houses, as we speak today, even there, notwithstanding the challenges, we have made significant strides. As at yesterday, 1,783 houses have been provided to military veterans from 2012 to date. Indeed, more can be done to ensure that we accelerate. And we have had a meeting yesterday with the Director General of Department of Human Settlement and our acting DG to look at how we can accelerate during the year 2021-22, noting the fact that we have set some targets which we want to achieve in the next year. So it's work in progress, but in the last 3 years, we've seen significant acceleration of delivery of houses, and we believe we're in the right track, notwithstanding the challenges that one has elucidated. The question that was asked by the chairperson of the Select Committee was, do we have memoranda of understanding? Do we have SLAs? Do we have instruments that guide how we should deliver? I can answer to the affirmative. We have an MOU with the Department of Human Settlement. It was signed a couple of years ago. We are reviewing it and updating it, and we hope to complete that process before the end of March, so that we codify our relationship and quantify what type of delivery we want. SLAs we also have with 9 provinces. We're reviewing them to update them to speak to the current mode of delivery. And also that process is run concurrently and simultaneously with the MOU review. Lastly, we're also reviewing the Regulation 14 to, among others, address issues that our experience of delivery has taught us. How do we look at the issue of thresholds? How do we look at issues of widows, of military veterans? How do we look at issues of offense and dependence? So we're reviewing those qualified relationships to be able to be responsive to some of the challenges. But we acknowledge that there are challenges, it's work in progress, which we hope we'll be able to address, assisted now by the interventions of the president and other relevant departments, because they've come to see and observe, and we have also observed, that the department alone cannot be able to deal with the multiple challenges facing military veterans with limited budget and capacities. It needs a government-wide enterprise to deal with these issues. The third area I'll deal with, which has been, I'll quickly dispose of. The area I want to deal with relates to pension and public transport. I think my colleague Sowengo has said, Mr. Sowengo has said, that these are inactive benefits. They are inactive for several reasons, but one of which was the fact that we mainly are focusing on policy, and we're also focusing on service delivery model, which we are actually hopeful that in the next financial year we will have beginning to pilot how we implement the two. Policy preparation is in advanced stage for both, and we're now finalizing the service delivery model. Hopefully by the end of March, worst case scenario, April, we'll have completed that process and therefore be ready to deliver within a particular policy framework and service delivery model. With regard to SRD, maybe let me, I'm sorry, Mr. Member Mutamai, you raised the issue of threshold in education. I must indicate that the issue of threshold came after consultations with military veterans formations themselves. Minister held a meeting with them in the form of SANVA and associations to look at the thresholds and how appropriate they are and aligned to the general policy of government. Members will recall that initially, the threshold for education basic level was 42,000, and then for higher education, it was 72,000. These figures were revised after consultation. As we speak now, we are sitting at 20,000 in basic and 88,500 for higher education. We also are working with NSFAS. Those who are in public schools are governed within the ambit of the policy of NSFAS around free education. And indeed, this is work in progress. As I indicated, we have made significant numbers in that direction. But we are, however, still sticking to the threshold as agreed upon in consultations with various stakeholders. It was not necessarily a unilateral decision of DMV. It was consultation with the departments, the relevant departments, and military veterans formation that made us to be in the threshold we're in now. And from time to time, we engage with military veterans to explain to them why we are doing things the way we do them. The issue also was raised on the SRD. Let me indicate that the SRD is not a benefit stipulated in the 11 benefits of the Act. It came as a ministerial directive after observing the the dire situation facing many a military veteran because of high levels of poverty, unemployment, and socioeconomic challenges. What then happened was in 2016-2017, the minister said in order to address the dire situation of military veterans, we must introduce a creative way of dealing with the challenges. When we started, it was 1,200 that were dispersing to military veterans. Up to the last but 1 year from now, we had supported 2,000, almost 3,000 military veterans with SRD. However, after consultation with the Department of Social Development, which manages legally and as a mandate, the issue of such social relief of distress, advised us that the manner in which we are dispersing this is not an appropriate one in relation to their legislation. And as part of our facilitative and coordinative role as DMV, we had meetings with them. We agreed we'll hand over SRD to be administered under the Department of Social Development with the requisite legislation, regulations, and policies so that we treat people equitably. And indeed, we had embarked on that journey just before COVID-19 started, and we're handing over approximately 6,000 applicants and those who had supported to social development. As we're about to complete the process of migrating this portfolio, which belongs, legally speaking, to social development, then what happened was COVID-19 intervened in March last year. And the Council on Defense met and said, given the situation military veterans are facing, with the intervention by the president to say they will give poor South Africans 350 rand, let's look at how we can top that money up for military veterans, at least to give a semblance of treating them in a special way as they ought to be. And indeed, after the Council of Defense in May gave us a mandate, we then agreed that we'll go back to 1,200, but we'll be topping up with 850. SASA will give 350. We've put systems in place, and then we're able to start actual disbursement in July last year. As we speak now, we've been able to support not less than 450 military veterans. We have disbursed not less than 4.9 million rands, a top up of 850. We now have had another situation where it was felt that those who are rejected by SASA for whatever reason should also be looked at, who are finding themselves in dire situation. And in that context, we then engage with military veterans through the provincial task team to say how do we deal with people who are falling in between the cracks. The latest report we have in that interaction with the Liberation Struggle War veterans, there are 600 who have been identified, who have been processed to be checked with SARS and other agencies so that we're able to make sure that we provide for them as well. And money has been allocated, set aside, so that as soon as we have done the due diligence, we're able to pay. So we are foreseeing an increase of SRD provision once it is being handed over at an appropriate time to the Department of Social Development. Lastly, on my side, it is about invasion. The chairperson alluded to the fact that there's challenges on invasions and there's apparently no integrated strategy to deal with the issue of invasion. I can advise the members that as part of our bilaterals with the Department of Human Settlement, we have developed a strategic framework to deal with invasions, and we have tested it in other projects, and it's working. Some of the elements of that strategy are that invasions happen when there is a delay between an allocation and the house is there and people see opportunity to take it. Now we have designed the way we deliver that if Mr. Dodovu is going to get a house, we actually at the stage of an earth say, this is your earth. When you start building, he knows that this is going to be my house. We inform associations. They assist us to protect it until Mr. Dodovu and his family get into that house. I can say we've been able, through that strategy, to prevent invasions in Palm Ridge and many other parts of the country. Where invasions have happened, we are engaging to reverse that trend. And as we speak now, working together with the Department of Human Settlement, we are dealing with the issue of Alu Ridge in KwaZulu-Natal. We are dealing with the issue of Lukanji in the Eastern Cape. And we have an approach and a strategy that advises us. We are working with together with military veterans. And this is going to yield results that we think are positive because we are finding each other on how to avoid these invasions. So there is a plan and a strategy. We are rolling it out. Of course, if there are limitations, we'll beef it up as we move along, just to assure the members. Relation with the municipalities, indeed, it's an area that within the context of the intergovernmental relations framework is an area that we've observed ourselves that we need to tighten to actually improve. As we speak now, a meeting is scheduled with the CEO of SALGA, with our acting DG, to deal with how we can relate to all the 278 municipalities in the country, utilizing SALGA as an instrument to assist us. So we are working towards strengthening relations with local government. However, it should be understood that with the limitation of capacity in the department, we may not be able to effectively deal with each municipality. What we've done now in that context is to tap into what is now the district delivery model, where we worked with members. I was saying that we are tapping into the district delivery model to better effectively and efficiently work with the municipalities. And with the assistance of the district delivery model, we think that we'll be closer to and access to our military veterans much better. Lastly, on my side, Chair, let me say that we have noted the challenges you brought to our attention and the observations, and as we move along, we'll improve in line with considering your recommendations. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Musi. I'll then invite Ms. Mungalo to address issues that relate to health and wellness benefits. I do want Chair to indicate that Ms. Murolo, who's the Chief Director in Health and Wellness, is also in the meeting. Over to you, Caroline.
Can I just interject for a moment, Ms. Malkus? We are also running out of time. This meeting was scheduled to end at after 12. Can I propose that you try and just give us more of a higher level summary in your responses? I know I'll be benefiting from this interaction, but then I would then move towards trying to summarize and close the meeting. But if you could please just be quite high level in terms of your responses. So, yes, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Caroline, high level, please.
Good morning, honourable members. Good morning, Chair, and thank you, Member.
Chair.
Come on, Chavele.
Yes, Chairperson, I was going to suggest that given the time constraint, that some of the answers could be given in writing. We can say within so many terms, so that we don't lose a lot in the high, whatever, the summarized version. I think the detail the devil is in the detail. Thanks.
Yes. Now,
Honorable
Chabaleng, we will still get the responses in writing. I thought for them just to cover, to give us a high level thing so that, I thought in my way forward, we will then also deal with a more intense written response. I see your hand is up. Do you want to say something?
Yes, Chair. I just want to say, let's give these people a chance to go home. We will go to them. We will go to the Department of Military Veterans to go and see that table inside the department and remove everything. Let's just give them the chance to go.
No, okay, no, fine, Armand Matana, you're not disagreeing. Can you please just continue? You've got 5 minutes, ma'am, to try and wrap it up. Thanks.
Okay. With regards to healthcare, I just wanted maybe to indicate that what we have reported on the document was mainly for this current financial year, but a total of 18,348 military veterans out of those 85,000 have access to healthcare services, which is provided through the South African medical healthcare facilities. And also, we, out of this 18,348, we are aware of 7,009 who are accessing services at least annually. And we have in the past financial year also paid around 107 million towards those services. And even now with our budget, we are at around 81 million of expenditure. And we are looking forward to maybe the expenditure of plus minus around 90 million. So yes, the services military veterans do access them. And maybe just on the issues of wellness, we might not be communicating all the successes that we are currently having as a department. But I'll give an example of Mr. Ganana at Western Cape, whom we visited last week. He didn't have a house. His child was disabled, was on a very old wheelchair. And we were able to facilitate for him to get the house approved the same week, and he's waiting to be given a key to go and access those that house. And also his the grandchild who was on a wheelchair, we were able to get him a wheelchair through the local district at PAL, and also ensure that he gets accepted into a school that will be able to assist him for the special disabilities that he has. So yes, we do try with the limited capacity that we have, but accepting and acknowledging the challenges we have, we do can achieve the best for the military veterans. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Marple?
Back to you, Chair, acknowledging that the areas where we didn't respond, we might submit a written response within 14 days, if you permit, Chair.
Sure. Yeah, we will do that. Let me just thank you, Ms. Marple, and your team. I think all members, given the time constraints, we also want to follow up. But we'll allow for the department to give us their responses in writing. But also I allowed you a lot of time to speak, Ms. Marple, and your team. Because I thought it was important that we get the necessary information and explanations from yourself. However, you know, when we requested a presentation from the department, we were not prescriptive, you know, to say we want your 2021 figures, which you chose to give to us, and while you indicated that it was a difficult year because of COVID. I think what is coming through in terms of your explanation are the actual work that you've been doing over these 10 years or so. And as these cumulative figures are actually quite important, and it gives us a better reflection in terms of what the department has been doing and what you've been achieving. But we also note that you, while you're dealing with these prescribed benefits, which are prescribed in law, to deserving military veterans, you do have your own challenges as a department, and you are in some areas falling short or failing the provision of some of these benefits. And I think based on some of your explanations, and I'm sure if when we do get some of the information in writing, we'd be able to have a better assessment in terms of the progress that you're making, especially in the areas of healthcare and education. But also, in terms of your presentation now, those challenges, as well as the questions us and members, the challenges around housing, around employment, There's still a huge concern, but I think the information you provide us in totality would also allow us as a committee to have an idea of what is going on. And clearly, I think very central to a lot of your problems in terms of delivery of the benefits to military veterans is the challenges that you have around your database. And I think this is also an important area that you need to focus on. But I think what is important to us as members of Parliament and as members of the Select Committee is that I think it's important that our military veterans who have been through a lot in their lifetime actually benefit within their lifetime. And I think this is what members have been saying. So these challenges that are being experienced by the department need to move towards being resolved. I think that we've agreed that there are unanswered questions in or areas where we need further written information and more details on some of the plans where you've also committed to give other plans that you would provide to us. And I think we will make a follow-up on this with yourself. And our members, I think we will continue our oversight over the department. I think it's important for us to monitor also the areas where there's a need for cooperation between the department and other government departments. because at the end of the day, I know we want to see more improved coordination, but more importantly, we want to see service delivery. And I think we are the National Council of Provinces. We intend doing more intensive oversight of these benefits that happen in the provinces. And in terms of the presentation made, and I think in terms of our engagement at the level of provinces, I think we'll also get a better understanding in terms of what some of these blockages and what some of these challenges are at the level of provinces. And if you don't remember, we will engage the minister so that we also ensure that there's executive accountability. I think that is what is required also in terms of the competition of the land. Let me just take this opportunity then to thank the department for providing us with this information and for the other information you will get to us, you said, by the 15th. We will await that information. Let me also then thank honorable members of the Select Committee, as well as Honorable Chavi Leng, the co-chair of the Joint Committee on Defense, for your participation in this meeting, for your deliberations. I think we are a lot more enlightened in terms of the discussions and the information that has been shared to us. And let me thank you all once again very much, and I'll declare this meeting closed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Watson.